The seventh parak of Yeshayahu, that which we will study today, is the first to deal specifically and directly with a documented historical event. The parak begins by situating us in the days of Achaz, king of Yehuda, and in the days of Ritzin, king of Aram, and Pekah, king of Israel. Those are the three characters who will reappear several times in this parak, and so it's well to keep them in mind as we begin. Achaz, king of Yehuda, capital in Yerushalayim. Ritzin, the king of Aram, capital in Damascus or Damascus. And Pekah, the king of Israel, capital in Shomron. Bear with me one more time as I go through these names. Achaz, king of Yehuda. Ritzin, king of Aram, Pekah, king of Israel. The event takes place sometime between the years 738 BCE and 734 BCE. It describes a situation in which Achaz, king of Yehuda, receives a message from the prophet Yeshayahu while Yehuda is being attacked by an alliance including at least two kings. And those kings who are attacking Yehuda, who are in this alliance, are Pekah, the king of Israel, and Ritzin, the king of Aram. These kings are attacking Yehuda due to the surrounding political context in which they are living. More specifically, Assyria has been advancing from the north towards Aram and then towards Israel. Pekah, king of Israel, and Ritzin, king of Aram, are concerned about the Assyrian advance, and they form an alliance between them to try and check and stop the Assyrians from moving southward towards their kingdoms. We know from historical information from outside of Tanakh that there are other kings in this alliance as well. They include Hanun, the king of Aza, as well as the king of Tyre and Sidon in Lebanon, or Tzor and Sidon in Lebanon. So there are a bunch of kings who work together to try and stop the Assyrians moving south towards Aram, Israel, and then southward towards Aza. Now, Yehuda is also potentially threatened by the Assyrian advance, but for reasons which we will see in this chapter, the king of Yehuda decides not to join this alliance. Perhaps he is scared that by joining this alliance, he will incur the wrath of the Assyrians, and he will cause greater harm to his own kingdom. And so the kings of Yisrael and of Aram try to force Yehuda into an alliance with them together to fight the Assyrians. The chapter therefore revolves around this issue. Should Yehuda join the king of Aram and the king of Yisrael in their anti-Assyrian alliance? Or should Yehuda take a different course? Essentially, there are three options in front of Yehuda. One option is neutrality. A second option is to join with the king of Aram and the king of Israel in an anti-Assyrian alliance. The third option is to submit to Assyria and take a position as being pro-Assyrian. Think about it in terms of the Cold War. Assyria is the great power. There's an anti-Assyrian alliance with Ritzin of Aram and Pekah of Israel in it. And then Yehuda has the question, should it join Assyria? Should it join the anti-Assyrian coalition of Ritzin and Pekah? Or should it stay neutral? Let us now begin to read the parak and see what advice the prophet has for the king of Yehuda in this very difficult circumstance. Vayhi, Bimei Achaz ben Yotam ben Uziyahu melech Yehuda, Ala Ritzin melech Aram ufekach ben Remaliahu melech Yisrael Yerushalayim lamilchama aleha, ולא יכול להילחם עליה. In the days of Achaz, son of Yotam, son of Uziyahu, king of Yehuda, Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekah, king of Israel, went up against Jerusalem to fight a war against it, and they were not successful in conquering Yerushalayim. In other words, they did not succeed in overcoming Yerushalayim. At that point, news was brought to the royal family of who exactly was involved in this attack. Vayugad leveit David lemor nacha Aram el Ephraim al Ephraim vayana levavol vavamo kenoa atzei ya'ar mipnei haruach. When the house of David, in other words, when Achaz was told that not only is the northern kingdom of Israel, called here Ephraim after its largest tribe, not only is the northern kingdom of Israel attacking Yehuda, but also Aram is cooperating with the kingdom of Israel. Nacha Aram al Ephraim. Aram is camped together with Ephraim. What happened at that point? Vayana levavo ulvav amo kinoa atzei yar mipnei ruach. His heart and that of his, the heart of his army, together shook like the trees of the forest shake when the wind passes through. There was great terror in Yehuda at the notion that they would have to counter not only the northern kingdom of Israel, whom they knew, but this kingdom of Aram, who was somewhat farther away, and who in times not long past had seriously threatened Yehuda. The Arameans threatened Yehuda in a very serious way in the years of roughly 840 down to 800 BCE, in other words, within 100 years before this time. In this terror which Yehuda is faced by the advance, on the one hand, of an Aramean-Israelite coalition, and on the other hand, the knowledge that Assyria is also advancing southward and is opposing this coalition, Yeshayahu comes and gives a message to the king. This message in Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Hashem el Yeshayahu, Tse na likrat achaz, Ata ushar yashuv bnecha, El ktse ta'alat ha-berecha ha-elyona, El misilat zedei choves. God spoke to Yeshayahu, go out to Achaz, you and Sha'ar Yashuv, your son, to the edge of the tunnel leading to the upper pool, to the road leading to the field of launderers. What is this field of launderers? It seems to be a field where people did their laundry. It is located at the edge of the tunnel coming from the upper pool. We don't know exactly where this tunnel is, but we'll see in the continuation that water imagery is very important in this chapter. And Yeshayahu is joined by Sha'ar Yashuv, his son, whose name will be important in this chapter and the subsequent one, and they're told to go out and meet Achaz. What are they told to say to him? Ve'amarta elav, pasuk dalet. Hishamer v'hashket al tira'u v'avcha al yerach mishenei zanvot ha'udim ha'ashenim ha'ele b'chori af ritzin v'aram uven rimalyahu. Say to him, hishamer v'hashket, be guarded and be calm. Do not fear and let your heart not be soft from before these two tails of smoking firebrands. Why are these kings called tails of smoking firebrands? The idea of a firebrand that's smoking is that it's all burnt out. It is no longer capable of igniting a flame. It still causes smoke. So too, the anger of Ritzin, the king of Aram on the one hand, and Pekah, the king of Israel on the other hand, they are no longer as powerful as they once were. They are not able to threaten your kingdoms in a serious way. They are not able to conquer Yerushalayim. Although you may fear the memories of what Aram once did to you, they will not currently be able to conquer you, and you ought not to change your policies in accordance with their dictates. The plots of Pekah, king of Israel, and of Ritzin, king of Aram, are detailed in the next several psukim, in which the Navi explains to the king why he ought not to submit to them. Ya'an ki ya'atz alecha Aram ra'a, Ephraim uvan Ramalyahu lemor. Because Aram, on the one hand, has counseled against you evil, and the kingdom of Israel has also counseled against you evil. So together, Ritzin of Aram and Pekah of Israel are threatening Achaz of Yehuda. And what are they saying? Pasuk Vav. Na'ale v'Yehuda unkitzena, v'navkiena elenu, v'namlich melech betocha et ben Tav'al. Let us go up against Yehuda and cause an end to it, and bring them over to us. V'navkiena elenu, the words the havkia el mean to break through. Let us break through to Yehuda and bring them over to us. V'namlich melech betocha et ben Tav'al. How will we bring Yehuda onto our side in this conflict? We will appoint a new king in Yehuda. This new king is called Ben Tav'al. name which is unknown from elsewhere in Tanakh. Rashi here comments, Ben Tav'al, someone who is good for us, Ben Hatov Eleinu. Perhaps it is possible to identify this Ben Tav'al, this person whom Pekach, king of Israel, and Ritzin, king of Aram, seek to appoint on the throne of Yehuda, by means of examining historical inscriptions from this time. In a stele of the king of Assyria at this time, which was discovered not long ago in Iran, we find mention of a king with a very similar name to Tav'al. This is Tubail, king of Tyre, at this time. We know from other Assyrian texts that Tubail, king of Tyre, that's Tsor in Lebanon, was in fact part of the alliance involving Pekah, king of Israel, and Ritzin, king of Aram. So perhaps they sought to appoint the son of the king of Tyre, who was part of this alliance, over Yehuda to replace Ahaz. Why might they have chosen the king of Tyre? Well, we know from earlier periods that there were connections between Yisrael and Tyre, and then connections between Yehuda and Yisrael. The king of Tyre's daughter married Ahav, an earlier king of Yisrael, and Ahav's daughter married the king of Yehuda. So there are historic connections between Yehuda and Tyre, which might explain the desire to appoint here someone from Tyre who would be more pliable to the desires of Ritzin, king of Aram, and Pekach, king of Israel. What is God's response to this? Pasuk Zayin, Kwa'amar Hashem Elokim lo takum v'lo tihyeh. This plan or plot of Aram and of Israel will not succeed. Why will it not succeed? Well, the kings of Israel and of Aram seek to do regime change in Yehuda. They seek to replace the king of Yehuda. God warns them, be aware, your own regimes can also have their kings changed. As the prophet articulates in Psukim Chet and Tet, Ki Rosh Aram Damesek, V'Rosh Damesek Ritzin, U'Ve'od Shishim V'Chamesh Shana Yechat Ephraim Me'am, V'Rosh Ephraim Shomron, V'Rosh Shomron Ben Remaliyahu. I will now translate Pasuk Chet and first part of Pasuk Tet. For the head of Aram is Damesek, the head of Damesek is Ritzin. In other words, don't be so scared of mighty Aram. After all, Aram is headed by a capital city named Damascus, and the capital city of Damascus is headed by a man named Ritzin, one king, not a mighty nation. That one king can also be replaced. Continuing with Pasuk Tet, V'Rosh Ephraim Shomron, V'Rosh Shomron Ben Remaliyahu, the head of Ephraim is Shomron, the head of Shomron is Ben Remaliyahu. In other words, so too the kingdom of Israel, here called Ephraim, has at its head a capital city named Shomron. The capital city of Shomron's leader is Pekach ben Remaliyahu. So too, one king rules over all of Israel. Don't be scared that this one king of Israel can cause regime change in Yehuda. Perhaps there will be regime change in Aram. Perhaps there will be regime change in Israel. Why be scared? Those kings happen to now be an anti-Assyrian and forming an anti-Assyrian alliance, which they want to rope Yehuda into. Maybe in a couple of years those kings will change. Historically, that is in fact what happens. Several years later, a new pro-Assyrian king is appointed in Israel. And so it really would have been somewhat foolish for Ahaz to join this alliance. Before we're going on, we should just point briefly that there is a very difficult few words in Pasuk Chet, which I did not explain. The end of Pasuk Chet reads, Uveod shishim v'chamesh shana yechat Ephraim me'am. In another 65 years, Ephraim will cease to be a nation, or will tremble from being a nation, or will tremble more than any other nation. This is a very difficult phrase, and I really do not have any good ideas of how to understand it within our knowledge of the history of the period. And so I leave it alone, and happy to hear of any suggestions. The end of Pasuk Tet is very important and very key to understanding the rest of this perek. The prophet has been telling the king, do not be scared of this alliance. Do not change your foreign policy to accord with its desires. Do not submit to them and join their alliance. The prophet is aware that the king may not be so likely to listen. The king Ahaz is not known for being reliant on God. He is known rather for being very open and willing to adopt various styles and practices that are not connected to worship of God, that are more connected to styles of surrounding nations. If we look at the end of Pasuk Tet, we see a suggestion of the prophet that he's aware that Ahaz may not stand up to the pressure. The prophet says as follows, Im lo ta'aminu, ki lo te'amenu. What does that mean? The word aman, the shoresh aman, literally means to be true. Ta'aminu in the hif'il, here, means to be considered true. So if you do not consider the prophet true, prophet is saying, if you do not consider what I, the prophet, am saying to be true, why would that be? Ki lo te'amenu. It is because you yourselves are not yourselves true. In other words, you yourself are in some way lacking, and that is why you might not consider me to be true. Now, historically, we know that at this point, Ahaz had already chosen his foreign policy. Rather than accepting the prophet's suggestion of hishamer v'hashket, be calm, be guarded, in other words, the prophet seems to be counseling neutrality, Ahaz has taken a very different step. Ahaz has, according to Sefer Melachim, Sefer Melachim Bet, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, second book of Kings, chapter 16, verse 7, Ahaz has sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, and has said to him, Avdecha uvincha ani, I submit to you, I am your servant, I am your son. He has asked the king of Assyria to rescue him from this alliance of Ritzin, king of Aram, and Pekah, king of Israel. He has joined himself to one of the two emerging blocks in international politics. He has joined the Assyrians and submitted to them in a rather subservient way. And so the possibility for Ahaz at this point to adopt Yeshayahu's policy of neutrality is no longer relevant. Ahaz has submitted to Assyria, and Yehuda must now bear the consequences of that. Perhaps it is because of that the second part of this chapter bears a somewhat different tone. Rather than suggesting a policy to Ahaz, the next several verses condemn Ahaz for the policy he has adopted. Thus we begin Pasuk 10, in which Vayosef Hashem Daber El Ahaz Lemor, God continues to speak to Ahaz, saying, and the Targum here is suggestive, Vayosef Neviyaya Dashem Lemalayim Ahaz. The prophet of God continued to speak to Ahaz. It would suggest here that the message continues to be conveyed through the prophet. Pasuk Yud Aleph, 11. She'al lecha ot me'im Hashem Elokecha, ha'amek she'ala, o hagbeha lemala. Ask for a sign from God, deep below or high above. The prophet suggests to Ahaz, if you don't really believe, ask for a sign. God will provide a sign. Ahaz refuses, Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayomer Ahaz, lo esh'al ve'lo enaseh et Hashem. I do not want to ask. I don't want to test God, Ahaz says. The prophet seems to understand this as a sort of mock piety, a sort of fake frumkeit, where Ahaz says, I do not want to ask God for a sign, whereas Ahaz has already cast his die. Ahaz has already chosen what policy he will adopt. He's becoming pro-Assyrian rather than taking the neutral policy advocated by the prophet. The prophet, therefore, becomes incensed at Ahaz, as we see in Pasuk 13, Yud Gimel. Vayomer, Shim'una Beit David, hear Beit David, listen, king from the house of David. Hame'at mikem hale'ot anashim, ki tale'u gam et elokai. Is it not enough that you cause people to be tired, that you should also cause God to be tired? Or perhaps we should translate somewhat differently. Is it not enough that you consider people to be worn out, that you should also consider God to be worn out? Hal'ot literally comes from the root la'a, to tired, but and it could mean either to consider tired or to make tired. So what the prophet here could be saying to Ahaz, is it not enough that you're tiring all the people out, that you also want to tire out God? Or I would prefer to understand, is it not enough that you are considering people worn out, that you would also consider God worn out? In other words, do you not think that God can save you from these from the Arameans and the Israelites who are attacking you? Do you not think that God's counsel of Hishamer v'Hashket is a wise counsel? God's counsel of be guarded, be calm, be neutral. Do you not think that is a wise counsel? And so the prophet now begins to give the king a sign. Pasuk Yudah. Lachen yiten Hashem hu lachem ot. Behold, therefore, God will give for you a sign. What is the sign? Hine ha'alma hara v'yoledet ben v'karat shmo Immanuel. Pasuk Tetvav. Chema udvash yochel leda'ato ma'os bara uvachor batov. What is the sign? The sign is, behold, this young woman is becoming pregnant, and she will give birth to a son, and she shall name the son Immanuel. He shall eat butter and honey before he knows to choose to reject evil and to choose good. Now, this pasuk, this message of the woman becoming pregnant and giving birth to a son named Immanuel, who will eat butter and honey before he knows to choose between good and evil, this sign figures very prominently in Jewish-Christian polemics in the Middle Ages. Christians, of course, understood this as a reference to their God. Jewish polemicists responded, pointing out two key points. First of all, the word alma here clearly does not mean a woman who has not had relations. It refers to a young woman, as we can see from many other psukim in Tanakh. Furthermore, the Radak, in commenting on this pasuk, notes one of the arguments that his father used against the Christians. This clearly, the sign cannot be understood as referring to an event many hundreds of years in the future. What is this? Let us return to Ahaz and to his need for a sign. What is this sign? Behold, this girl is becoming pregnant. She will give birth to a son whose name will be Immanuel. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? This son will eat butter and honey before he knows to choose good and evil. Well, is it a good thing to eat butter and honey or a bad thing to eat butter and honey? At first blush, it would appear that eating butter and honey are very, very good things. After all, butter and honey are quite tasty and delicacies. But as we see in the continuation, this is not always such a good sign. Pasuk Tetzayin continues this idea that this is a good sign. Ki beterem yeda ha-na'ar ma'os bara uvachor batov, before this child will know how to choose between good and evil, will know how to reject evil and choose good. And that, of course, is a suggestion that this child will very soon know how to choose good and evil. The Radak here comments that it's around age of three that a child knows how to choose between good and evil. Before the child reaches the age of three, in other words, the next 3 years and 9 months, te'azev ha'adama asher atakatz mipnei shnei melacheha, the land from before whose two kings you are fearful will be abandoned. What land is Ahaz scared of its two kings? That would be the land of Yisrael and Aram. So Yisrael and Aram will be abandoned in the next 3-4 years. Why will those countries be abandoned? Well, why do you think? Because having formed an anti-Assyrian alliance, those countries will be subjected to the full wrath of the king of Assyria, who will come and attack them and exile them. Yeshayahu, of course, is aware that Assyria is an extremely powerful kingdom. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Here, the wrath of Assyria we expect to be turned against Israel and Aram. But Yeshayahu suggests here that something else will happen. Yavi Hashem alecha ve'al amecha ve'al beit avicha yamim asher lo vau lemiyom sur Ephraim me'al Yehuda et melech Ashur. God will bring upon you, upon your nation, upon your father's house, days which have not happened from the time that Ephraim split off of Yehuda. What is it God will bring? God will bring the king of Assyria upon you. In other words, upon whom will God bring the king of Assyria? Not only upon Yisrael and Aram, but also upon Ahaz. The rest of the parak addresses this issue of God bringing the king of Assyria to attack Ahaz. V'haya, pasuk yudchet, 18, V'haya bayom hahu, Yishrok Hashem lazivuv asher b'ktzei yi'orei Mitzrayim v'ladivora asher be'eretz Ashur. On that day God will whistle to the fly, which is at the edge of the Nile channels in Egypt, and to the bee that is in the land of Assyria. Uva'u v'nachu kulam b'nachalei habatot uvinkikei hasila'im uvechol hana'atzutzim uvechol hana'halolim. All these representatives of Assyria and of Egypt, this bee and this fly, will come and camp within all of the houses and rocks and crevices of the land of Yehuda. In other words, all of the Assyrians and the Egyptians together will cause grievous harm to Yehuda. Now we find one single note of hope in Pasuk Chet before we go back to understand how this prophecy is in fact a prophecy of destruction and what the butter and honey has to do with destruction. Pasuk Chet suggests that while the Assyrians will attack Yehuda, they will not succeed in totally demolishing Yehuda. Pasuk Kaf 20 notes the attack that the Assyrians will be repelled by an attack of God. Bayomahu yigalach Hashem betar hasichira be'evrei nahar b'melech Ashur et harosh v'se'ar haraglaim v'gamet hazakan tispe. On that day God will shave with a hired razor on the other side of the river. He will shave the king of Assyria, his head, the hair of his legs, and also his beard will be destroyed. Now, it's important to understand what this bizarre message of God hiring someone to shave the king of Assyria is all about. From Assyrian art, it is very clear that the hairiness of the king is one of the signs of his power, one of the signs of his maleness, one of the signs of his ability to fight in battle and win. And so the Assyrians consider their king to be powerful and the beard to be a sign of his power. It's sort of like the beard is his muscles. And so God here is responding to that Assyrian image of power and saying the time will come when God himself will cause the Assyrian king to be shaved, in other words, to be disempowered, to become effeminate and powerless. And that image is going to be affected by this hired razor. Who is this hired razor? Some faraway kingdom on the other side of the river. In other words, one of the kingdoms on the other side of the Euphrates will defeat the king of Assyria. And historically, that frequently happened in this period, that it was the kingdoms in the area of what's today Armenia, especially the kingdom of Urartu, who succeeded in defeating the king of Assyria, or at least holding him at bay and preventing him from attacking in the area of Yehuda. Now, on that day when the Assyrian attack will happen, and when God will destroy the Assyrian attack with his hired razor, we find a message in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, which explains that imagery of the child eating butter and honey. V'aya bayomahu, when the Assyrians will come and invade Yehuda and sit in all these crevices and in all the cracks and in all the houses, on that day, v'aya bayomahu, yichaye ish eglat bakar ushtei tzon. Pasuk 21, on that day a man will keep alive a single calf and two sheep. Why would a man only keep alive a calf and two sheep? Well, when the Assyrians come, one of the things that they do is they exile large portions of the population, they eat up all the grain, and they eat up much of the animal stock. And so a man will only keep alive on that day a little bit of cattle and sheep, and he will not have any grain in the fields, and many people will be exiled, so there will not be many people in the country to work the fields. As a result of that, what will happen? There will only be cow and sheep herding, and only very little, and no agriculture that requires farming, that requires intensive investment of manpower and labor. People will not till the fields, rather people will keep alive a single cow and a couple of sheep. What will happen as a result of that? Pasuk Kafbet 22, V'haya merov asot chalav yochal chema, ki chema udivash yochel kol hanotar bekerev haaretz. From making so much milk, because there will be so much milk from these cows, people will eat butter, and there will be only butter and honey to eat, all those who are left in the land. In other words, butter and honey, which we thought was a sign of delicacy, is in fact a sign of exile, because there will be no people left in the country to till the fields and to produce grain. There will be no people left in the country to till the vineyards and to produce grapes. There will be no people left to harvest the olive trees and produce olive oil. So the classical foods of Eretz Yisrael, grain, grapes, and olives, will no longer be available. What will be available is chema'a udvash, butter and honey, foods that do not require an intensive investment of agricultural manpower, because the Assyrians will attack not only Aram and Yisrael, the Assyrians will also attack Yehuda. In other words, Achaz's decision to join with Assyria, become subservient to Assyria, in order to asking the Assyrians, save me from the hands of Aram and Yisrael, that decision that Achaz took has severely bad repercussions for Yehuda. It will result in the Assyrians eventually attacking Yehuda. Historically, that is in fact the case. Once Achaz enters the orbit of Assyria, pays tribute to Assyria, he sets in motion a series of events in which Assyria considers Yehuda for the foreseeable future and almost forever after to be a subservient dominion to Assyria. Assyria requires its subservient dominions to pay annual taxes to Assyria. And so Yehuda is now required to pay annual taxes to Assyria. That is a very, very difficult challenge for Yehuda to face. V'haya b'yomahu yecho makom asher yesham elef kefen be'elef kasef la'shamir ve'la'shayit yihyeh. On that day, every place which once upon a time had 1,000 vines worth 1,000 pieces of silver, all those places will be abandoned for weeds and thorns. Why? Because the Assyrians have invaded and have exiled many people from Yehuda. And so there's no longer any people around to produce agriculture. Bachitzim uvakeshet yavoshama ki shamir vashayit yechol haaretz. They will come up to those houses, to those hills, which once upon a time were served as vineyards. Those hills will now become hunting grounds in which people come with chitim and keshet, with bow and arrow to hunt for animals. It will all be thorns. There will no longer be people tilling the land. V'chol he'arim asher b'ma'ader ye'aderun lo tavo shama yir'at shamir v'shayit v'ya l'mishlach shor u'l'mimah seh. Those hills which were once hoed with hoes and where weeds don't grow, on those hills cows and sheep will pasture. So that the image of plentiful milk causing butter and plentiful flowers bringing bees and causing honey, which you thought was an image of plenty, is in fact an image of exile. And so the sign of Immanuel, the sign of this child, who before he grows up will eat lots of honey and butter, is in fact a sign of destruction. It is not a sign of goodness for Yehuda, as Yehuda might have thought. It is in fact a sign of the impending exile and abandonment of parts of the land of Yehuda as a result of the Assyrian advance. Now, Assyria did not destroy Yehuda historically, but Assyria caused grievous damage to Yehuda and did in fact exile segments of the population of Yehuda in various attacks on the borders of Yehuda, and then on the innermost part of Yehuda, between the year 732 BCE and 701 BCE. And so it is telling that this chapter begins is the first reference to clear reference to historical events in Sefer Yeshayahu. It is a chapter which begins the interaction of Yehuda with Assyria. It is a chapter in which Yeshayahu advises the king to adopt a policy of neutrality. The king refuses that policy, and Yehuda bears the consequences.